Hi, and welcome to the My Dog Made Me Do It Naturally podcast. I am your host, Kat Jepsen, a canine nutritionist with an innate obsession with dogs and the natural ways in which we are driven to live because of them. So, let's get to it. Hi, and welcome to another episode of the My Dog Made Me Do It Naturally podcast. Welcome back. We've had a little bit of a break over the summer, but this time we're ready to get going. And now we're going to be talking about specific topics around how we can support our dog's holistic health. Now, I have a very, very special guest with me today. Today, I am joined by Caroline Griffith. Hi, Caroline.
Hello. Hi, everyone.
So Caroline Griffith is a fundamental icon in the natural and holistic pet health movement here in the UK. She's been working in the pet industry for over 29 years, has qualifications in nutritional therapy, has worked with and consulted for a number of pet food companies on recipes and PR, including Nature's Menu, Phoenix Bark, Stag Bar and The Farmer's Dog, and a few others. Caroline is also a committee member of the Raw Feeding Veterinary Society and is a registered training provider for the Ofqual regulated qualifications in canine nutrition through the Canine Holistic Science Academy. Further to this, Caroline is otherwise known as a spiritual dog trainer and founded Canine Flow, which is a soul-led approach to connecting with, understanding and training our dogs. And if that wasn't already impressive enough, Caroline also runs the Natural Dog Expo conference in the UK and has published 2 books. More recently, has become a founding associate of the Veterinary Regulated Association of Pet Nutrition Consultants for the UK. What a resume, Caroline. That's fantastic. So, I love it. Following on from such a fabulous introduction, can you give us some more info on your experience and work life within the pet industry?
Yeah, I mean, you said so many, I'm almost wondering if that's really me. Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? When someone says all the things that you've done, it's like, wow. But I mean, I have had a lot of time to do them. So it's not like I've done them all in 5 years. That would be even more impressive.
Yeah.
But everything's led, this is going to sound so cheesy, but it is so led by wanting to see dogs happier and wanting to see them understood better as well. Yeah. I think that's my key factor, and that's my key driving force, really. Yeah. And I love running the event, the expo. It's just so much fun, and I also really enjoy bringing people together and uniting people, because it can feel, when you start to consider more natural ways of being with your dog, whether that's behavior wise or food wise, it can feel quite isolating sometimes. So this unification and bringing people together for support, I think, is really key.
Yeah, fantastic. And I think as well, the whole vibe and energy of this community is just so sort of like, it's just inspiring in itself, isn't it? When you do get in the room, like at the expo, and everybody's in that room and everybody's just buzzing and bouncing off each other and really excited about everything that's being discussed. And it is such a great space because, like you say, especially if you've got a group of family and friends that maybe aren't as interested in dogs as what you are, and they kind of just don't kind of get how you feel about things, you can kind of feel isolated, especially when you work online as well. So just by being immersed in that physical community gives a lot of, you know, a lot of positive wellness to the people that are in it.
Absolutely. And I find that this community, we're questioners, we want to learn. We don't take things at face value. So chatting and networking is all part of that, which, as you say, we don't necessarily get the chance to do that. We've like-minded, like-hearted people that often. So yeah, that questioning is really key for me, because that's where historically sometimes the traditional veterinary industry has sort of seen the raw feeding world as kind of a separate, and you know, they've even used awful words like cult to describe us historically. I mean, back in the 90s that was bandied around quite a bit, but really we're the epitome of someone who isn't in a cult, because we're questioning and we're moving away from doing things in a set pattern or in a set way. We're questioning. We want to know what's right for our dogs as an individual, rather than just trusting that someone else has the answers. So it is completely moving away from that now. And this energy and this wanting to learn and this enthusiasm is infectious. Yeah, at that event, but also in the community in general.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely is. And I do also think as well that, well, most of the pet parents that I speak to, and myself included from my own experiences, when you kind of take a piece of this world, when you first kind of like dip your toe in it, you just can't help but find yourself searching for more and looking for, you know, more avenues to kind of put that, more rabbit holes to fall
down. Rabbit holes, yeah. Yeah. Well, there's so many wonderful, wonderful books out there. And many of the best ones have been around since the 90s and early 2000s. I mean, there's some great ones now as well, of course. But yeah, my go-tos, my favorites are the people that were around in the 90s and the 2000s. And so sort of maybe, I think it would have been about 12 years ago, is when I moved from working in a kennel and cattery with dogs, and creating recipes and supporting them in that way, as well as caring for them. That's when I moved into the manufacturing industry and worked for raw pet food companies. And that was right at the beginning. So to be there right at the beginning in terms of the raw industry growing, I think it's just been amazing for me to see things change. There's talk now that the raw feeding industry, or should we call it really the fresh feeding industry, because the lightly cooked brands, I think, are part of this as well. Yeah. It's about 15% of the market now, but it used to be only about 3% when I first got involved in the manufacturing world. And there was maybe one or two companies. I mean, back in the day, we used to order our raw food from Anglian Meat Products, and that really was the main one. There wasn't really another one that you could go to. And then they were under the umbrella of Nature's Menu. So Nature's Menu, I went in as their nutritionist 12 years ago. And the Country Hunter range was formulated. I helped formulate that and bring that to market. It's changed a bit now, the formulation, but we did that while I was there and really tried to stamp raw as a way of feeding that was easier and affordable. And just really to try and dispel some of the myths that it wasn't safe. So that's what we kind of did back then. And I've stayed in the industry since. I have worked for lightly cooked fresh food companies as well, because I think it's really important for us to remember that lightly cooked food exists as well, because often we say, okay, raw didn't work for me, or raw didn't work for my dog, or my dog didn't like the raw. But we often just completely skip over and go straight back to a processed food. And there's this wonderful other food that's kind of in the bowl going, what about me? What about me? You can me. And this ready cooked, lightly cooked, ready made, really, variety of food is available. And you can either home cook it yourself if you have recipes from people like yourself or me. And that is actually economical, and I know how to support people to do that economically, and I'm sure you do too. And also you can get it ready made from other companies, so there's no need to skip over that lightly cooked. So the fresh message for me is key now. It's gone beyond just let's feed raw, let's feed fresh food. And if you choose to feed that fresh food in its raw state, then I think that's actually easier to do. But if your dog, for whatever reason, isn't eating that, you can use fresh, lightly cooked. And process for me is way down the line.
Yeah, no, I have to agree. I think I do find it difficult to have conversations when people ask me for recommendations for processed food, because I struggle to actually,
very hard, you know. Even if you're going for one that ticks boxes such as it's grain free or it's a higher protein or meat content, all the things that people think are better, mainly due to marketing. I mean, to be honest, a lot of them are better, but you're still essentially saying to a guardian, it's okay for you to feed your dog a food that has no bioavailable calcium, no omega-3, and isn't actually complete, because the guidelines themselves aren't complete. So how can you hand on heart do that to that dog?
Absolutely.
Tough decision.
It is tough. And I think as well, it's important to also, like, I like the term fresh food over, you know, raw feeding. I mean, I agree with you. I think raw feeding is far much easier because of the bones, basically. Yeah. Like, the biggest thing is the bones. Plus, they make up sort of like, you know, a quarter to a half of the weight of the food. So it's a hell of a lot cheaper than cooked food. But in my experience as well, I find that because of the state of the world today with, you know, the environmental toxins and the chemical load that our dogs are subject to because of obviously the different treatments and places that they live, some dogs just can't tolerate it. So it's nice to have that extra piece to be able to offer those dogs that need that bit of, you know, extra support, which is in the form of freshly cooked food.
Yeah.
And also because like 15% of the market is now sort of like fresh food, which when you're kind of immersed in this world, you feel like it's a whole lot bigger than that. You feel like it's got to be more than 15%. But so that just goes to show how many pet parents we've still, you know, we can still kind of inspire and motivate and, you know, help to educate and learn as well. But yeah, so 29 years of experience, that's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when I first walked into my job at the kennel cattery, and the lady was just lovely, and she bred and showed Pyrenees Mountain Dogs and Lhasa Apsos. We used to go to Crufts every year and various other shows as well, and she had 20 cat cabins and 10 dog cabins, and she also had some other spare ones that she would use for dogs that were no-sode vaccinated. So back then she used to she used to take those in as well because she really believed in homeopathy and natural ways of caring for dogs. So I was kind of thrown in the deep end, really. And she got me on my first weekend working there to divide up some ribs that I was then going to give to her Pyrenees Mountain Dogs. And I was like, wow, you know, I've got to actually touch the meat. And it was, you know, 16. I'm like, oh, my God. But, you know, I just learned pretty quickly. And, you know, she was like, well, here's a book for you to read. And we didn't really have the internet then. So she was like, have a read of all these books and, you know, talk to this person. And Chris Day was the vet that she used. He's very sadly passed away now. But yeah, so he was a natural vet that wasn't too far away from us, really, in the grand scheme of things. So yeah, I learned really on the ground, seeing the dogs and the cats in our care get healthier or not healthier if they chose not to use the herbs and homeopathy that this lady was talking to them about, and to continue feeding processed food. But as soon as the dogs or the cats were switched away from processed food onto whole fresh foods, even whether that was cooked or raw, and started to look at considering adding homeopathy or herbs into the dog's diet, the dogs and the cats would just completely change. I mean, absolutely amazing, some of the things that I saw there. And I was hooked because I was like, I want to be someone that can support those dogs and cats to change. And I mean, this lady, Dawn was her name, she was doing that, but it was on a very minimal level because obviously we had only so many dogs in our care, or only so many cats in our care in one sort of year, if you like. And I wanted to do that on a grander scale. So I trained to be a human nutritional therapist, because at the time there were no courses. I mean, I run about pretty much the only Ofqua regulated level 3 diploma now. I'm about 80, 90 students. So I'm teaching a course that I wish was available when I was younger.
Yeah.
So yeah, I put my heart and soul into it because I know what I wanted to learn back then. So so I trained as a nutritional therapist, and I would pester people like Chris Day and Nick Thompson back in the day, and I would ask questions, is this the case? Is this the case? Is it the same for dogs? Is it the same for cats? And I basically self-taught myself in that way. Everything I learned, I then went to find out if that was the same with dogs and cats. And obviously then sort of had the knowledge, if you like, that I was able to start to help the dogs and the cats in a bigger way. I decided to write a book about dog food in the year 2000, I think, possibly. years and times all seemed to go into one for me, but that got given to the MD of Nature's Menu at the time, or Anglian Meat Products, who wanted to unite them. That's when I started working in the raw industry, really, in the fresh pet food industry. And that was, the journey. That's where the journey in the manufacturing started. Yeah. So wow, I was already organising events then, though. I was already organising events. So I used to do lots of charity events, fundraising events for rescues and things like that back then. So having this event is, for me, it's just a natural progression, really.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. And you can tell you're so passionate about it just because of all the different branches that you have, you know, and that you manage now in your work life, which I imagine just brings you so much personal reward as well, you know, being able to actually achieve the dream that you had when you were 16, because you have, you know, helped to open the door for a lot more people to get into natural and holistic pet care, which is just, you know, the UK has been so far behind. Well, basically worldwide, I think, but everybody's still got plenty to catch up on. So it's really, really inspirational what you have achieved. So thank you for being so, you know, motivated in your 29 years of experience to be able to bring this to people as well.
Yeah. I mean, there are some other lovely people that have been inspirational to me. Sometimes I feel like it's a bit sad they get forgotten, like Catherine O'Driscoll from Canine Health Concern. I mean, if it wasn't for her, we would not be where we are today fresh food feeding. Absolutely not. So she definitely needs a bit more recognition, I think, and her books are phenomenal.
Yeah. Well, we might have to get her on the show.
Well, no, she's sadly passed away.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Okay. So I had quite a lot of meetings with her, did some of her courses, read her books, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Oh, that's really sad. But like,
going on YouTube, there's me interviewing Catherine.
Oh, is like there?
Video. I don't know that I am very proud of how I was in the video, whether I was particularly asking questions as well as you were. But yeah, you can find that on my Spiritual Dog Training YouTube.
I'll have a search and see if we can find it. Oh, so my next question is, was there any kind of one dog or pet that changed everything for you in terms of searching for the more natural approach to pet care and determining your path to where you are now? Or has it been a case of kind of like, you know, just everything along the way?
It has been everything along the way, really, because... Yeah, I think because at 16 I was thrown into the world and I was educated by people who really knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
It was many, many, many dogs and cats, really, that they were my inspiration, because I saw them get better and I saw how dogs become on certain diets. So the kennels and the cattery was more of a holiday kennels cattery. So yes, we had the dogs that were bred and used to go to crafts and what have you and go to the shows, but we used to see the animals again and again because they would like the kennel cattery and they'd like the fact we were smaller, so they would come back in each year, sometimes twice a year, sometimes three times a year. So we would see a lot of the same animal for the whole of its life, and I would see the differences in terms of whether they were naturally cared for and naturally fed or whether they weren't, and the differences in their lives, the differences in the ailments they got, because I was there over 20 years, so there's lots of dogs that I was able to see, and also their behavior as well. So I was able then to really get a full picture of how dogs' lives can be if they're cared for in the more holistic, natural way, or if they're cared more in the traditional way. And when I first started, we had this really tiny bit on the shelf for medications. And by the time I left over 20 years later, we had that same shelf. We had the whole shelf running the kitchen. Different cats and dogs that were on medications.
Wow.
Absolutely bonkers. So that changed. That changed a lot. And there was the same amount of cats and cabins, cats. And so something shifted. So whilst our community's grown, I do think on the other flip side, animals are more poorly.
Yeah, it is. It's a sad situation. And it's one of those things where in the past, maybe 30 to 50 years, we as a society have seen some massive changes in just basically how we live, how we work, how we communicate and spend time with each other, with dogs, and basically the products that we consume and use. And because it's not like the health problems we're seeing in dogs, it's not unparalleled to what we're seeing in people as well, is it? Even though the natural space is growing, we do still have a problem that is growing as well, which is, you know, kind of like the downside to the other end of the spectrum.
Which may be that in effect is pushing more knowledge on the natural side of things, because people are starting to look elsewhere because they're just not finding the solutions traditional ways.
And it's good to, like we mentioned previously, it's good to kind of broaden the horizon and see what's available before you kind of make your choice, isn't it? Rather than just kind of hearing about one thing and saying, okay, that's the way to do it. There's so many different approaches you can do when you open the holistic pathway to be able to kind of consider and weigh up your options, which is fantastic.
Definitely.
Yeah. Okay. So moving on to the topic of the day, I believe that you would like to chat about water and how it is undervalued in nutrition, which is something we haven't talked about yet. So I'm really, really looking forward to it.
Yeah. I mean, we kind of know a little bit, don't we? We kind of have our suspicions that there might be too much fluoride in the tap water and things like that. So on one aspect of water to understand is what else is in it that probably shouldn't be there. So, you know, chemicals that are either being put in the water for whatever reason, or chemicals that have ended up in the water system of the whole planet, the whole ecosystem. So you can use filters, and you can take those out to a degree. Sometimes you can really like almost sterilize the water, if you like, and create water that doesn't have any of those things in it. So that's one aspect of understanding water, is what else is in it, really. But the second aspect of understanding water is that water really is part of everything in nature, and water's part of it, has this essence, this vital life to it. Okay, so if the very fact that your heart is beating, you have a vital life force flow, and that's measurable as an electric field in the heart. Now, anything that has electric also has a magnetic aspect to it, so essentially it's electromagnetic. So this is your vital life force flow, and everything in nature has this as well. So all plants will have this, all creatures will have this, and this is all fully measurable as well. The Institute of Heart Math have published loads of data on measuring the electromagnetic field and how it changes depending on how we feel, which is really important. Our emotions change our electromagnetic reading, really, which is really interesting. And this is something that's obviously projected out from us that can be measured about 3 feet away from our body. So everything in life has this field, this vital life force flow, and so does water. But what happens if we channel water into thin pipes or even thick pipes, really? But if we channel it in one direction, it starts to lose its vital life force flow. And so by the time it gets from our tap into a glass, it's in effect dead water. Now, even if we clean that and take all the chemicals out that we might suspect are there or are definitely there, even if we do that, we've still got a water without any vital life force flow. So what happens is molecularly it's changed, really. So it's not got as much hydrogen and potentially hasn't got as much oxygen either. So it's hard to describe, really, but it's something that it goes deeper, this understanding. And I believe that food has its own vital life force as well. And one of the reasons that fresh food is more nourishing is because it's also nourishing the dog's vital life force flow.
Yeah.
So water naturally should be thought about for that reason as well, for sure. And we're cleaning it, but we're not actually awakening the water, and it's so easy to do that actually. We can do that quite easily. So
then, even when it's out of the tap, you can awaken it.
You can. There are ways that you can bring back the vital life force.
Okay.
I'll give a couple towards the end. So, I mean, yeah, we can do this. And this, I believe, is what we should think about doing, because a lot of the water that we drink, okay, that becomes our blood. So they say it's something like, you know, I've forgotten the exact time span, but it's like hours or minutes anyway. It's not that long in our daily life that the water we drink becomes our blood. And we know that blood spins. That's again measurable as having this vital life force flow that spins. So essentially, all this vital life force flow, all the electromagnetic field can be measured, and it's like a spinning. It's a bit like a spiral or a Fibonacci spiral, is the mathematical way of looking at it. So if you can spin your water, you start to wake it up and bring some of that vital life force flow back again.
Yeah. When you say spin it, what do you mean? Just sort of like, so, put it in a glass and then sort of like stir it?
Yeah, literally that simple. Yeah, you can. It's kind of that simple. So there are some tools, there's many layers really, but that you kind of, it's like I don't exactly know what it's made of, but this is quite an expensive way. But you can have this like wand, and you will stir your water with this particular wand type implement, and that will wake it up again. So people buy them and then they keep them in their handbags and that kind of thing, so they can use them out. You can also use like a funnel, but they're from somewhere called Panasun. So if you Google that, you can buy these funnels and you literally pour the water in. I find if you do it at a slight angle, it goes in the funnel better, and it goes round and round and gets spun into this spiral, and down into your glass. So you can do that as well. These are just simple little ways, really. But there are like bigger ways to do it. There are now hydrogen water bottles. Now, the issue with the hydrogen water bottle, is that you're kind of electrocuting water in a way, which isn't necessarily the nicest way to bring more hydrogen and to wake it up. But it does give more hydrogen in the water, this particular, these hydrogen bottles. So you can do that. And there's loads of science behind increasing the hydrogen. It's increasing the hydration of the water when you've got more hydrogen in the water.
Right, okay.
So within the body, not only is it becoming blood, but it's also becoming your fascia. So your fascia is a little bit like a jelly-like watery substance. That's all the dog's fascia as well.
Yeah.
So that gets very dehydrated, very easily dehydrated. And it's not the kind of dehydration that we see when it's at an extreme level, like a dog's been shut in a car and the poor thing is dehydrating, like literally it's gone into acute dehydration. You can have chronic dehydration that's happening in the background all the time. And now if you drink awakened water, you will find that water nourishes and becomes the fascia more easily. So it keeps the dog more supple as well by giving them this kind of water. Okay. Which also for me relates to behavior, because I'm very much into how they feel and how posture and pain and how the dogs emotionally are relates to their behavior. So this all is related to it, having a more hydrated fascia system. It means that the nervous system works more optimally. It means that the vagus nerve functions more optimally. So many things happen in the body if it's properly hydrated. And we can't see. You see, as guardians, we often wait until there's a problem in front of us and then go, okay, how can I fix that? But prevention is better than cure. And the more hydrated your dog can be, the healthier they are going to be, their fascia is going to be healthy. There's a great book. They call him Dr. Batman. If you Google, that's not his full name. It's an Indian name, I think. It's quite hard to say. But if you Google Dr. Batman and his water books, you'll have them come up and you'll be able to, they won't be much, because there's many copies. These are kind of from the 90s, early 2000s, again, these books, but phenomenal books. And they explain all the body parts that rely on being hydrated. And so many of them, so many of them are wrong in our dogs, or ailing in some way in our dogs. So I think when you're feeding fresh food, what's happening as well is you're hydrating the dog with the food. I mean, we know they don't drink as much when they're eating raw food. So this is partly one of the reasons. So they're getting a lot of hydration. And in fact, wolves hardly drink anything. They haven't been observed to drink much at all. So they're getting a lot of their moisture content and their hydration and their hydrogen from the food that they're eating, which is amazing. So yeah, it's really, really important for us to look this up and understand. So there's two other aspects as well. One is to understand the importance of oxygen in water as well. Now, because of the way water is, because we're not drinking it in this awakened state, we also lose out on oxygen as well. And for many, many dogs, either structurally, say like a bull breed, or just simply because of the world that they live in and the amount of toxins around, they're not going to be breathing properly and they're not going to be taking in as much oxygen. And this can happen with people as well. We often, if we're in a stress state, aren't breathing as optimally as we could be. So there could be at times a reasoning behind your dog having more oxygen in their water as well. So you can't really have both more oxygen and more hydrogen in it. It would be quite difficult to do that. But you can get oxygenated water, which you can give your dog. If you've got a bull breed, then I would say that's something to look at before you add in hydrogen, for instance. It doesn't mean you can't spin your water, because you could still wake up the oxygen water more, but I wouldn't be adding sort of hydrogen drops or trying to hydrogenize that water as well. So it depends on the dog really and what's going on for the dog. If you haven't got a bull breed and you raw feed, I would just be kind of waking up your water. If you have got a bull breed, I would have a look at this oxygen water to begin with, and you can still wake it up a bit. But if you've got a dog that's not particularly well, or a dog that's eating processed food for whatever reason, I would be looking at hydrogenizing that water, try to get that hydration up, because they'll have a chronic dehydration going on in the background. More sedentary dogs also end up with a dehydrated fascia as well, because it's the movement often that allows for changes to happen in the body, allows for things to move and the fascia to move and to come alive as well. So yeah, a dog that is older and more sedentary might need to be supported with that as well. So yeah, any thoughts from you?
Well, yeah, no, that's all really fascinating. I've not even heard of that before, to be honest. But now you've actually explained the concept behind it, it completely makes sense. Like, makes perfect sense, because I mean, I take an energetic perspective on nutrition anyway. Obviously, when you draw from like Chinese medicine principles and just energetics in general, that each different protein and food has a different energy that kind of influences your energy and your dog's energy. It just makes sense that water has the same sort of energy as well. So basically, tap water is like processed water in terms of how we would pay in a way.
The best way to describe it is tap water's irrigation.
Okay.
And awakened water is hydration. So there's no harm in irrigation, because we have a lot of stuff in our body that we need to get rid of as well. And people say, oh, I can't drink too much water because it makes me wee. Well, that's because you're having irrigation. If you had hydrated awakened water, it would go where it's meant to go. Wouldn't just come out the other end and take some crap with it that potentially in your body. Now, there's an element for that happening as well. But yeah, if you're drinking, I mean, obviously, if you're drinking loads and loads of water, maybe you will still pee and be hydrated if you're drinking lots and lots of awakened water. But yeah, you shouldn't need as much water if you're drinking hydrated water, because it should go where it's meant to go. Oh, and you shouldn't be peeing it out all the time. So yeah.
I know, I absolutely love that, because I think, you know, water is one of these big topics where I think more and more people are becoming aware of what is in tap water, especially within the UK, because there's more kind of movements against bringing awareness. And I mean, I haven't drunk tap water now for, I think, it's over a year. And I do, I use a filter to filter it out. We do have a distiller as well, but obviously a distiller takes everything out of the water.
Yeah, that can do, and that needs waking up, that distiller. Yeah. But it is obviously very pure. It's kind of like sterilizing it. Yeah.
So we don't tend to drink so much of that. I might cook with it, or you know, put it in the stews. And I don't ferment things with it, because fermentation doesn't like sterilized water either, does it? They like water with nutrients.
It's not alive. Yeah.
Exactly. So we've got a Birkfeld? I can't even, Birkfeld filter.
Yeah.
Birkfeld filter. Yeah, we've got one of those I can't remember the exact name, but one of the big stainless steel ones with the candles in. Yeah, so we have one of those. But now when I fill that up with water from the tap, like all I can smell is like bleach, you know, like
the
smell. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it's because of the area that we're in, or because I'm so used to not drinking water, which has got kind of fluoride and things in it, but the smell is so powerful. And I just think before I stopped drinking it, I never noticed that smell, you know, like it didn't even click on. So I think now that more and more people are becoming aware of it, they might start to notice and sort of like pay attention. But I do think I am going to try and start waking up the water, because I've never even tried that. But I do, you do still feel at times where you don't feel well hydrated, even though you're kind of like making sure you drink enough. So it makes perfect sense. I can't believe it. And I'm going to have a look for those books as well. I think you've just sent me down another rabbit hole.
Oh, yes, this is one that will be hard to come out of.
I know.
It's just amazing, really, water as a substance. And we don't have, we really are not honoring water. Need to really respect water more than we do across the whole world, you know, not just the water that we're giving our dogs and the water that we're potentially drinking, but different lakes and rivers and the sea itself. And, you know, it's a living thing.
Yeah, water. It is. So, and we wouldn't be able to live without it. I think every single cell in your body has water, isn't it? And every single function that your body performs needs water to be present to be able to do it. So it's not as if, you know, oh, it doesn't matter. It matters.
Yeah.
So one thing, I've got a question, which hopefully you'll know the answer to. So if we're feeding fresh food, which has, obviously, as we know, probably around 60 to 75% moisture, is the moisture in that food awakened?
It should be. It depends. Obviously, time degrades everything.
Yeah.
So it depends how long since it was taken from the animal, how long it's been frozen for, all that kind of thing. But yeah, it should be much better hydration than, yeah. But it still doesn't hurt to kind of spin the water into your dog's bowl. The other thing you can do is get organic lemon or organic cucumber, and you can put slices into a jug of water and put it in the fridge overnight. Just cover it with a tea towel or something, and yeah, that will be awakened water, or a lot more, because in the fruits and vegetables is the hydrogenized water. So this is why fruits and vegetables with a water content are good for us as well, as people especially, not necessarily our dogs. So yeah, the more we can eat of these moisture rich, nutrient rich vegetables and plants, the better for us as well, from a hydration point,
yeah, which just, it makes perfect sense, which is why I think one of the most common questions that I get asked when helping pet parents who are moving from a processed dry diet to a fresh food diet is, why has the amount of food that my dog eats like per day increased so much? Because obviously with the processed food there's no moisture in it, so they probably need like 200 grams, whereas with the change to a fresh food they'll need somewhere close to double that, you know, or maybe a little bit more. And it's because of that moisture aspect. But like as you previously mentioned, dogs that do eat a fresh food diet tend to barely drink from the bowl at mm-hmm. all, which, mm-hmm. you know, you can just tell that there is such a need for that water in there. And is it something like a dog's body? I mean, you're going to know this because you will because it's your thing. A dog's body can detect dehydration when it drops. Is it by 0.1%? 0.1%, did I get that right? Okay. Which is, you know, wow.
It's internally they will. And one of the things that starts to happen is histamine comes out as a buffer to the cells. So they can end up with chronic mild dehydration just from eating processed food.
Yeah. Wow. Absolute madness, isn't it? I think. And it must have been so kind of, what's the word? Maybe influential to see how the different diets play out in front of you, you know, from working in the kennels and the cattery and things, like in the way that it's kind of shaped your life, which is stemmed all around dogs and their nutrition and their behavior. So I think in terms of how kind of like that relates to water, so when you, throughout your years of experience, at what point did you learn this about the water?
Well, it's interesting how, I don't know if other people can relate to this, how you're either given a book or you read something, you think, oh, that's interesting, oh, that's cool, and then you forget about it for ages. Yeah, or like it was years later, because I was given that Dr. Batman book years ago, and I read it and thought, that is really interesting, never did anything about it. And then I would say probably about 10 years ago, I started reading about Dr. Emoto, who was someone who photographed water crystals when you played the water different types of music or you said certain things to the water. And then he would photograph the water crystals and they would either be completely symmetrically beautiful in a sense that the maths of those would match the Fibonacci and what we call this geometry that goes across the earth. Everything has this geometry to it, this maths to it of the Fibonacci. So it would go with that, or you would see the water that couldn't make those crystals because it had been either spoken badly to or played some kind of death music, you know, this awful stuff. So it, one of the two, essentially low vibration. So I kind of got into that, and he even used to have a book that had like CDs with it and you could play certain types of music which had been shown to create these crystals. So the idea was it was going into your body in that way. But then later on I saw, it must have been about maybe 3 years ago, I started to notice this lady called Vaida Austin, and I got sent, somebody must have sent me it. It was one of her followers at the time, because she teaches about her water and how water holds a resonance and how water holds an emotion. And she'd had this picture. Someone had left some water out overnight that had previously been used to, I may get this wrong, I have to remind myself, but it had previously been used to clean like organs, and one of them was the heart, and they were deer hearts, and the water froze overnight out just outside, and it made a picture, because there was some tints of red in it still from the blood, and it made a picture of a deer. And I was just like, oh my god, what's going on here? And it was like a big wake-up for me that the water held the resonance of where it had been. And like the heart, obviously, is the Institute of Heart Math, has proven the heart is so powerful and so emotionally powerful. And the emotions are readable as this electromagnetic field, as I've already discussed. Yeah. So it's no wonder that then that water took on the resonance, the frequency of the heart and what it had been, and it showed this in the water. And I was like, oh my god, I need to know more. So Vaida's doesn't really do the same thing as Emoto as such. So she has her own freezing method, and she encourages you to connect with the water, really. And the water to show you aspects of you. So you would, and you would maybe ask it a question, and it might show you the answer. And she's got these different hydroglyphs as well, that through hundreds of times of freezing water in certain ways, she's come up with this kind of language that water can use to communicate back to us. And she also has an experience where she, just to see what would happen, because she's always so curious, she took this bowl of water that was outside a cafe that she'd seen dogs drinking from, and she froze some of it, and the dog's type of dog's face, like silhouette, was in the ice crystals. So again, it's reflecting.
Really, that's so fascinating, isn't it? You can't believe it's true, can you? You know, it is true though.
And the pictures are on her. They're in her books. They're on her Instagram. But there's an interview. I interviewed her. She's from New Zealand, and I have always been one of these people that if I'm really passionate about something, I tend to be able to make that happen. And I often like shock myself. It's like, be careful what you wish for. And I thought to myself, goodness, she's in New Zealand. Oh, I'll never get to meet her. And I thought, well, I want to. I really want to interview her. And then about a month later, she posted that she was coming to the UK. I thought, right, I don't care where it is, I'm going. I'm gonna ask her if I can interview her. Anyway, it was only Exeter. And I thought, oh my God, that's like just up the road. This is amazing. Like, she's actually going to be coming to Exeter. So I contacted her and I just said, please, can I interview about anything to do with dogs that, that you've ever seen? Because I want to have this as on my YouTube channel for the Spiritual Dog Trainer. And she said yes. So she came to Exeter a couple of years ago to give a talk, which I went to as well. And she also did an interview with me afterwards, which you can have a look at on my Spiritual Dog Trainer YouTube, talking about any of the photographs or experiences she's had with dogs and animals. Really, it goes into animals as well.
Wow, that's fascinating. That is, I've definitely found a new rabbit hole to look to get lost in.
it is amazing. And it also goes to show just how vital it is for us to understand emotions and how our subconscious emotions are influencing ourselves and our dogs, is influencing the water we go to drink. And when we drink that water, it's like if we're putting a feeling into that water, we then have that water to drink. We're like becoming that even more.
So we
make shifts and changes in our lives and empower ourselves further by having this awakened water.
Have you used this then with clients who have come to you for help, like in your retreats and stuff like that? And have they had positive experiences by following the method?
I have taught it, but as they say, you can lead a horse to water.
Oh, yeah.
They have taken it on board, but I won't stop teaching it.
I'm gonna try it and I'll report back with a full you'll get a full report, because I'm a bit like you. I like to ask questions. I am definitely one of those who asks all the questions, even sort of like if you know I don't know, we're fixing something on the farm, I need to know exactly what we're fixing, exactly how it, you know, came apart. I need to know everything in my own mind for it to make sense. But I'm definitely going to try that. I'm going to try it with me. I'm going to try it with family. I'm going to try it, including the dogs and everything. So I will definitely report back on my experiences. But no, that's really fascinating. And I think one of the things that a lot of people are still kind of catching up with is this whole concept of energy and emotion, and how, you know, because we're so concentrated from a conventional perspective on physical health and tests and test results and things we can see on paper, you know, to be able to understand that, because emotion and psychology is very much kind of like subjective, and you can, I mean, there are tests and things that you can kind of do, and you know, that to kind of say how you feel and stuff, but because it's so it's basically just this big wide open field, isn't it, of theory and concepts, that a lot of people find it hard to put together as something that can be so fundamental to their health and their dog's health as well.
I think also we haven't known where to look for it being measurable, because it is measurable actually, but we haven't been looking in the right places.
Yeah.
So there's a fantastic guy called, I think it's Marcus du Sautoy. If you can find his program, so that's all about maths. Mm-hmm. And maths either adds up or it doesn't. And it's phenomenal. His talk about geometry and the geometry of the planet, and it's not in any way spiritual or soul kind of based. I mean, his soul's probably quite happy he's doing the show, I'm sure, but you know, it's not coming from that place.
Yeah.
All maths. And you're like, wow. The whole time I'm going, okay, that makes total sense. The entire planet has this Fibonacci sequence in it, and this Fibonacci sequence becomes the things we see, becomes shapes, you know, it becomes the square, it becomes the pentagon, it becomes the bigger than that, you know, it becomes the stars, it becomes the fractals, it's everything.
Yeah.
Is that. And it can be reduced down to, it is the maths. And the same maths are used in nature, in the way that insects fly, the directions they fly, where they go to, the patterns that they make. It's all about patterns, really. And then you get the Institute of Heart Math, who have literally measured the difference in our electromagnetic fields. And what's amazing is that if you're feeling gratitude, you get a reading of this mm-hmm. machine. So it's measurable. If you're feeling sad, you get a reading of this. Mm-hmm. And this will hopefully blow everyone's mind. It blew mine when I found it. and it's that, because obviously when you get these readings, it's a long set of numbers, isn't it? So you're getting numbers. A bit like if you had a frequency of music or a certain sound, you get it in numbers. That's how you're measuring it, and that's how you're reading it, and that's how you're noting it down. Now, obviously, there's certain frequencies for gratitude and sadness and all the other emotions, and guilt is one, obviously, of course, that a lot of us have stuck in our body. Well, the reading for love is 1.618, which is the Fibonacci. That's the golden mean.
Wow, really?
The sense of pi. They call it pi.
Yeah.
So when you're people say, well, what is love? You know, we even had that song, what is love? It's like, oh my God, like this is the ultimate $64,000 question. Love is measurable as 1.618, which is the golden mean, which is the vital life force flow. It's the state of being that is progressive. It can evolve, it can flow, it can move, it's awake, you know, and it can be anything. So that kind of point that we start from is a place of love. So really, when you wake your dog's water up, you are putting love into it, because it's a state of expansion, of growth, of evolution, of change, mm-hmm. and transformation. So it's so important. And I think we just haven't known where to look for the measurements. So we've just presumed it's all woo-woo, but actually it's not when you know where to look. Also, Jim Al-Khalili of Surrey University, he runs the quantum biology department of Surrey University, which was only set up in kind of the mid-2000s, so it's fairly new really in the grand scheme of things, but he set up this quantum biology to measure things like this and to measure the vibrational state of things and how that then influenced the body, the messy body, you know. So there are lots and lots of places to look for science, but actually in my canine flow course, which actually there's only a small part of actual nutrition in it, my canine flow course is where I bring all this science together, because I'm then teaching how the dog's vital life force flow influences their choices of behavior. Mm-hmm. And that is just phenomenal, because they're not mentally choosing to do these behaviors. Mm-hmm. And yet we always train them from a let's train their mind point of view. So we're actually missing a trick by not understanding how valuable and how forceful their vital life force flow can be in getting them to it's almost like they're magnetically linked towards things, and they want to focus and go towards that like a magnet.
Yeah.
So because it is an electromagnetic way of being. So there's lots to kind of learn on the canine flow, which you can then apply to food as well.
Yeah, no, that's fascinating. Yeah. Now I'm going to have a look at the canine flow as well now.
Oh, I just love it. It's always on the back burner for me because I'm so busy with the food side of things and the nutrition side of things, but it has grown alongside. It's always been the two. And the science that I find out for one influences the other.
Yeah. And I think sometimes nutrition always seems to be the first place people go as well, isn't it? So like your dog's struggling with health problems, then you look to change the nutrition. And it's only when you kind of become aware of the space and aware of the different practices that are available that you kind of think, well, if food's having this much of an impact, then, you know, what else could be having an impact? And I think I know from personal experience that I've got two Boston Terriers, Boris, who is epileptic, and Barney, who is he's as strong as a bull. He really is, apart from when he gets stressed, he gets really bad kind of like GI disruptions, like comes out in yeast overgrowth. You know, you can basically tell that his gut is really stressed. And it wasn't until maybe like 2 years ago that I actually figured out it was because of their emotional states, because Boris is his epilepsy is strongly correlated to stress as well. So, and obviously it was my fault because I was super stressed. So it's when I focused on myself and and grounding my energy and working on my stress levels and practicing meditation and, you know, just basically gratitude, you know, because I think, you know, gratitude is a big part of how I keep myself grounded, that they actually did start to show remarkable improvements, even though, like, you know, nothing really had changed for them. It was just me and how I was dealing with stuff. So, you know, I think until you kind of actually see it play out in front of you, or you have been, you know, part of that experience.
Yeah.
Some people struggle to think, no, you know, that can't be true, which is another one of the things that we're up against working in this space. But I think, you know, to go deeper into the canine flow and everything like that, that's probably going to be the second rabbit hole that you sent me down today.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah, it is. But you want to say, well, nothing changed for them. But actually, fundamentally,
one of
the biggest influences to them and their health and their state of being have changed, which is you.
yeah because they are very, very much so mummy's boys as well, you know. Like I've had them both from being puppies, and they've both been a part of some really, really tough times that I've experienced over the past 8 years. So, and they have been, you know, one of the reasons why at a particularly low time in my life, they were the reason that I got out of bed in the morning, and they, you know, I had a purpose in life. So we do have a deep connection, which, you know, I think a lot of people might not understand, but from my viewpoint, that is, like you say, I think one of the things that I try to kind of help people understand now is that you, as their guardian, are a fundamental part of how they feel and behave, and, you know, basically can maybe contribute to some of their problems.
Yeah.
Without, you know, it's one of those tough things, isn't it? Because when we try and approach health in this way, it's not so much focusing on one thing, but we have to look at everything, which, you know, it's just, that's the way that it has to be. But then when you find yourself working through it, it becomes so amazing and so beautiful.
Definitely. And it's a journey. And once you start, it's like other things just appear and you go, oh, yeah, OK, I'll start learning about that, or I'll start doing this. And the right things appear. It's amazing. They really do.
It's the whole concept, isn't it, of like where some people say you speak to the universe and you basically get what you ask for. So if you kind of like searching for things, and but more so in a positive way, that's when you'll find yourself kind of stumbling upon them, rather than if you surround yourself with negative energy and negative thoughts, like with the water, if you say speak something bad or think something bad, then that is what, you know, kind of in return. So I think focusing on positivity is fundamental, isn't it, in moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, for me, it's understanding what's in our subconscious, because that's actually what's there on a chronic level, if you like, all the time. And that's what we're picking up on. What we kind of consciously know about, like if we consciously tighten on the lead when another dog's coming along, that's quite, I would say that's more of an acute thing that's happening. And yes, that can affect the dog, but not as much as the rest of the day when you were walking around the house holding that guilt subconsciously.
Yeah.
We need to be dealing with our subconscious, because actually when you deal with your subconscious, you'll find that the conscious acute times aren't there so much anyway. So that tightening on the lead, because you're not as scared in general, you haven't got that in you, any of those emotions much held within you, so when you go into situations you're not acting in the same way, the same as the dog. So yeah, but we could do a whole other podcast now just on feeling our flow, I think. Yeah.
This is what happens. I can't help it, I just can't stop talking, honestly.
It is fascinating. And then it comes in the big circle back to food as well, and the vital life force that's in our food. And yeah, so it's all linked in. It's all linked in.
I think that's one of the great things about holistic health, though, I think, because for me, when people come and they want to have a look at the different aspects that are impacting their dog's health, at first glance it's so overwhelming, because it looks like there's so many different things, especially when you break it down into emotions and behavior and things that are in and around the home and the environment and the food, and everyone's like, whoa,
I know it's too much.
Can't deal with that right now. But I think, like you say, if you take it piece by piece, because it's not a rush, is it? I think and any kind of great thing comes with time as well, and that's the biggest part of it, isn't it?
And actually, once you start, it becomes easier.
Yeah.
It does. It becomes so easy. You haven't got to make these huge changes. You just slowly do them. You know, like my latest thing is try to eat no refined oils. Oh, goodness, it's hard. It's in everything. So, of course, if you go out for dinner, you're bound to be having them. And you can't be saying, exactly what you're eating on every menu kind of thing. It's difficult to do, but this is why it's tough to do, but I'm managing it at home.
Yeah.
Ways to make it work. But when you're learning to do a new thing, you've got to find out more about it. You've got to research. You've got, where can you buy the things that you do want to be eating? And that takes time until it's just something you do. It's just like driving, you just suddenly know how to do it and it just becomes automatic, and then before you know it, you're looking at the next aspect, and the next aspect comes along and you learn about that and you sort of implement that in your life, and that becomes automatic, and then the next one comes, so that when you go out and you're buying anything, you know what it is that you want to choose for what reasons, and it just comes automatically. And there is a lot to worry about, because there's a lot that's been put around us that isn't great for us and our dogs or any of
And I think one of the things as well now is, as with anything where there is money and profit to be made, there will eventually be flaws in the system. So even now within the raw food space and within the fresh food space, there are still there's starting to appear some the cracks are starting to form in some areas as well, which is where now it will benefit pet parents and guardians to actually learn a bit more about how to choose the foods and how it interacts with the body.
Absolutely.
Because
I mean, you should do a podcast on that, because people say, oh, what's the best quality, but sometimes people answer because they had good customer service that dog must be having the best quality food, and it's like no, what is quality really?
I think
quality for me is clean meat, is purer meat. Same for you, I think. It's finding that. Even if that pure grass-fed, grass-finished, organic, whatever meat was over-blended, that's still better for the dog.
Yeah.
And yet people say, oh, but it wasn't chunky enough. Now that might put the dog off eating it, fine, but it's still better for the dog. It actually is quality these days.
it is. And I think that's where it gets confused, because, and a lot of it is, I mean, we're going deeper into a different topic again now, but like for me, it's the components of the meal, because I think some of the companies, I mean, it happens everywhere. The cheapest available ingredients are going to bring the most opportunity for profit, and sometimes these foods have got nothing but kind of fatty cuts and and cheap bones, and there's no actual real meat within them, but because they're all kind of regulating themselves to follow a certain, you know, kind of label, they can get away with selling it as something that's kind of complete and stuff like that, when actually it's, you know, nutritionally not quite there, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things for me, is for people to be aware of what cuts of meat are in the food and where the nutrition is actually coming from, as opposed to just kind of, well, it's raw meat and bones, it's fine, you know what I mean, that kind of thing.
Yeah, DIY is really the way to feed, which just people get so worried about it, but we feed ourselves DIY all the time.
Yeah,
I mean, this is how we eat, is DIY. It is, I think it's much cheaper. And it is easier in the end. You know exactly what your dog's getting.
Yeah. And it's a lot more, you know, mentally enriching for the dogs as well, because they get to kind of really get the teeth stuck into it. The ones that like it anyway. I mean, I know plenty of dogs that won't even take on a bone. It's just like, I want the mince, please.
Do they what to do with it if they haven't had that before, so they have to kind of relearn how to strip a raw meaty bone.
Yeah But I mean, times are changing, so I think the more people that we can kind of get to dip the toe in at least a little bit, and then if we just kind of like drip feed them, give them breadcrumbs of brownie, homemade sweet potato brownie or something like that, we can kind of, before you know it, they'll be immersed in canine flow and waking up their water, which is what we can hope for. I can't wait to go and try it. Honestly, I'm going to go and try it.
You need to call this podcast "Wake Up Your Water."
Yeah, I think I will do.
Oh,
well, that was absolutely fascinating. I've definitely learned a lot of things, and I'm definitely going to be waking up my water now. So, thank you very much for bringing such, you know, what's the word, wisdom to the show. Yeah.
That's okay.
Okay, so briefly moving on, you have got some very, very exciting news about the next expo, don't you? I think the next expo is, what date is it on?
So the next Natural Dog Expo is Sunday the 27th of April next year, so 2025, Sunday the 27th of April. It's not Easter, for anyone who thinks, oh, is that Easter? It's not. And it's the week before the bank holiday this time, because I have a lot of people that say, well, can't come because I'm doing stuff for bank holiday. So this time it's not on the bank holiday weekend.
Yes. Okay, smart. That's smart. Because I know a lot of people would be upset about not being able to come, though, wouldn't they? Because, you know, everybody looks to this event. It's like the only natural dog expo in the UK. Yeah. And it is still brand new because it hasn't been happening for a very long time. So just for any listeners that may not be aware of the expo, what can you expect as a pet parent if you attend?
Okay, so it's in Solihull and it's in a really easy to find venue, and there's loads of parking, so you're totally fine. And I have loads of volunteers, so when you get there, you don't need to worry about anything. They'll help you know what to do with your coat or your bags, or if you can keep those with you if you want. There's seats, everyone's sitting. I do actually have messages sometimes, will we be standing? And I'm like, no. Yeah, so it's all like, it's really friendly as well. I'm really, you know, organized, so you know where to go when you get there. And so there's different speakers, one of which is myself talking about water. So
are you going up on the stage?
Yeah, crazy. So yeah, so I will be talking about water there as well. And then we have Carol, who is microbiome expert. She was one of the most popular last year, actually, or this year really it was, wasn't it? But yeah, so almost last year. So she is coming back to talk to us about microbiome again. Absolutely pivotal to know this, because it influences so many health issues. So we also have Dr. Connor Brady, who many of you will know. He's coming to give us a talk as well. Sherry Scott, who is founder of the IAAT, the International Animal Therapists Association.
So
she's 80 plus now, and just amazing that we've got her, really, you know, who knows how many other talks she's going to be doing. So that's pretty cool. And Dr. Sue Armstrong, who is a phenomenal holistic vet who's been around for decades, really. And Dr. Sue Armstrong is the reason why Dr. Brendan Clark is even practicing natural, because he met her and learned from her so much and was inspired Perth. Wow. It's terrific, terrific to have Sue. And yeah, and then we also are really excited that we've got Rodney Habib coming over.
Yeah. Rodney!
It's been quite some organising. Yeah, but Rodney has agreed to come over. So he's going to be with us again, which is really big news because he's so much fun.
Yeah, and for, if you haven't heard of Rodney is basically Dr. Karen Becker's right-hand man, isn't he? And they,
in a way.
Those two are kind of like really influential in basically empowering pet parents to take control of their pet's health, aren't they? And actually starting to question some of the common practices that that everybody just basically, we just assume a role as a pet parent, I think, when we do get pets because of how society portrays us. And he has, I think he's really one of the most followed kind of like motivational speakers for pet parents in the world, along with Dr. Karen Becker. So it is.
Figure-wise, he is. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
On who watches his videos and his YouTube socials and all the rest of it. Yeah, really, really high. So I mean he's definitely someone to come and see because he hasn't been to the UK for 7 years. He might not for ages again. Because he can't always make it over here. So it's terrific really that we've got
it
here.
Is,
so,
it is. Yeah, because it's gonna be great for the expo as well, isn't it? Because obviously every year it goes from strength to strength, and some of that strength lies within the speakers and the people who kind of like endorse the movement as well. And, you know, if you have ever watched Rodney speak or watched any of his TED Talks or, you know, if any on of his YouTube videos, I don't know how he holds so much information in his brain. He's literally, you know, like he remembers everything, doesn't he? You know, and he's so passionate about giving power to the people when it comes to caring for the pets. So I imagine a lot of people will want to come and watch his talk.
Yeah, this is it. And you just learn so much, really, and you meet great people, and we have a few sort of stands. So I kind of hand select really people because there's a lot in the canine natural health world, a lot of supplements, a lot of this, a lot of that, and it's finding the ones that are really going to work. So it's just between them all. So I only really have brands there that I know are going to make a difference. So yeah, they're great to meet as well. It's just really good fun. I find it's a really good fun event.
And one thing that I really like about it is because I work online. Like all of my work that I do is online, and I've met a lot. In fact, everyone I have met through social media, many from before when I had a natural pet shop, which I closed down because I wasn't satisfied with the things that I was selling. Obviously, when I learned about them, I was like, okay, I'm not going to sell it anymore. I don't agree with that. Anyway, that's a different story. And last year I got to meet a lot of the people that I had made friends with over social media because obviously I live in the countryside, we're building a homestead, have a toddler, don't have time for actual physical socialization very much. So it was very nice to actually go out and be in the physical side of this community that we, you know, that we get to enjoy. So I think it helps bring the people together, and just, you know, everybody just gets hyped up. It was fantastic. Everybody was going mad for Rita this year as well, wasn't there, when she did the talk on energetics. And I actually won a consultation, which I was so excited about.
I knew you'd won something because there's this terrific photo of you like standing up clapping that you'd won something. I was like, oh my goodness, she's won a prize. But it was Rita's consult. That's amazing. So did you have the consult?
Yeah, I had the consult. It was fantastic. I chose to go with Boris because he obviously is epileptic, and I've been obviously one of the things with epilepsy is when I first found out he was epileptic, I was so scared because every time he had a seizure, I thought he was going to die. Basically, like I imagine a lot of people feel, you know, because you're just so scared for your pets. So I've worked hard, obviously, reducing the anxiety around it because obviously my stress affects him and da, 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 da. So I was really keen to speak to Rita about a herbalistic approach to kind of epilepsy and things like that, and it was great. It was so much fun because, you know, Rita as a person is just so lovely. And she's one of the people that, you know, I aspire to hopefully be like one day as well. So it was fantastic when she came over to say email me. I was like, I'm literally your biggest fan. I was just like so uncool about the whole thing, but I just
amazing.
just,
But you made it happen. That's the thing.
Well, yeah.
If you're really passionate about something, you can make it happen. Yeah. Yeah. you made yourself win of it.
Maybe. No, I was thinking, it's like my friend that I went with, she was like, as if like you won that. Like, if you know, if anyone should have won, well, not should, but you know what I mean, because I was bang on about herbalism and stuff, but they were like, I can't believe you actually won it. I was like, I know, it was fantastic. But yeah, it's such a fun day. So I think, you know, if you are in the UK, or even if you fancy a trip just for the expo, that would be, you know, fantastic. If you can achieve that, then definitely come along, because each different speaker talks about a different subject, and they're all, you know, kind of like pros, if you like, in the field, mm-hmm. from where they're coming from. So it is a fantastic day.
Yeah, thank you.
So what I will do is I'll include all the links to the expo, if people want to buy tickets, in the podcast, in the notes. And if people want to kind of like reach out to you directly and maybe ask a few questions, whether it's about the canine nutrition courses or the canine flow, where can they find you?
Canineflow.com for that side of it. And you can, even if you want to email me from there about nutrition, you can as well, if you can't find the other website. But the other website is now it's canineholisticscienceacademy.com.
Yeah.
Yeah. I sometimes think, was it holistic canine science? But no, it's Canine Holistic Science Academy. So it's a bit of a mouthful, that one. To put it into Google. But yeah, I'm there, and my courses are there, my nutrition courses.
Yeah, okay. And then following the nutrition course, the Association of Pet Nutrition Consultants?
Yeah, so the APNC, Association of Pet Nutrition Consultants. Yeah, we're going for veterinary regulatory support on the term canine nutritionist, or canine, or pet, really. You could be cats as well. So pet nutrition consultants. So yeah, that's a growing movement, really. And you get to do a mentorship to join as an associate, so you learn how to formulate, really, to make sure that the fresh food, whether that's cooked or raw, is complete and balanced, and you learn lots of other things as well, like how to read blood results and all sorts of things that you wouldn't necessarily learn on my level three. So yeah, the prerequisite to being an associate is to do the mentorship, which comes after the level three. Or if you can prove that you can already do the things that you're taught on the mentorship, you can become an associate. So you will then be a veterinary regulated canine nutrition consultant.
And that is to add a well-needed regulation into canine nutrition and, well, pet nutritionists in the UK, isn't it? Because that's something that is lacking at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah. It's so pivotal. It's so pivotal. And we do really need a way for vets to be supportive of what we're doing.
Yes, so because at the minute there is some kind of conflict.
A lot. A bit, yes.
Yeah, which is difficult. It's difficult because, I mean, we are stronger together. So, you know, if we can find a way to work together, then that would be absolutely fabulous.
Definitely.
So, yeah, so anyone that's interested in that, I will include all the details in
the so links. There's so much.
You're going to start getting an influx of emails now. You'll be thinking, oh. But, okay, so that was such a fabulous chat. Thank you ever so much for taking time out of your day to come on and talk to me about, well, it was supposed to be about water, but I think we've covered loads of different topics as well. So this is what happens. It's not just about one thing, is it? It's been a pleasure to have you on the show, Caroline, and I'll look forward to catching up with you again in the near future, and hopefully we could maybe do a few more episodes if schedules allow.
Oh, I'd love to, because we kind of only just scratched the surface, and I think we've been longer probably than most of your podcasts have been. Thank you everyone for listening to us, and I hope it's really helped you, and do reach out to me if you would like any support, or just to say hi, I believe in what you believe in. I love emails like that.
Yeah, no, because they lift you up, don't they, and they inspire you to keep going as well. It's fantastic.
Yeah,
thanks so much, Caroline.
Thanks for listening to another great episode of the My Dog Made Me Do It Naturally podcast. Don't forget to check out the caption for any links discussed here today. And please, if you enjoyed the show, follow along and listen for free on your favourite podcast app. If you have any questions or would like to share your story, feel free to email me at mydogmademedoitnaturally@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Purpose of this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only and should not be substituted as advice from a veterinarian or other professional. It does not form a client relationship with me, the host, or any guest speakers, and any information is not intended to and does not diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent disease. And my guests express our own views, thoughts, and opinions as individuals, and the podcast neither endorses or opposes the views, products, or services discussed here. If your pet is ill, always seek advice from your veterinarian. I am not a veterinarian, and I do not treat disease or offer medical advice.